Nam namakari bahudani jasarvasakti stotai pitani yata smaranena kala etadrisi tavakri bhavagaman manampi durdaivam idrisam ihajani nanuraka. That these names of the Lord, they are invested with all the transcendental energies of the Lord. Krishna's names like Krishna and Govinda, these names, they are primary names of the Lord. It is said that the Lord has two kinds of names, primary names and secondary names. The secondary names are relating to works that the Lord is performing in the material realm, such as, for example, you can say Srishtikarta, the one who is doing the creation, or you can say Jagat Sakshus, the eyes of in the universe, right? Always present. So, of course, those are also names of Krishna. But the names of Krishna, where Krishna is present in his own eternal pastimes, those are the names that attract Krishna the most. When the name of Krishna means all attractive, we find two explanations. Mostly, we hear the explanation that Krishna is all attractive in the sense that he can attract all living beings. He is Madan Mohan. He is the one who can attract even Cupid, which is extraordinary. It is said that Lord Brahma was engaged in the process of creation, and at one point he made the day and the night. And as he arranged for the day and the night, then in between there was twilight, and twilight was sort of a bewildering, illusory type of energy. You weren't quite clear what you were seeing, and somehow or other, some saw this beautiful female form in the twilight. So the attention of all in the universe went there. And it is said that Lord Brahma himself, for a moment, became distracted. And what am I seeing? It said at that point, from his side, a personality appeared. Lord Brahma, like, who is this personality? Very beautiful and kind of sweet, smiling. Then this personality suddenly manifested a bow, and a flower bow, and with this bow began to shoot arrows into the hearts of all of everyone in the whole universe, and everyone went mad. Everyone. Starry eyes and all that. Because it was Cupid who had appeared from the side of Lord Brahma. And even Lord Brahma himself became a little affected. So Madan Mohan is not a small thing. One who conquers even Cupid, that is Krishna. So mostly when we hear the meaning of the name Krishna means all attractive, it's referring to the all-attractive power of Krishna. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta also gave another explanation of this name, Krishna, and or other meaning to the translation, all-attractive. He said that Krishna is the one who can be attracted by the service of anyone. So that's another translation of Krishna, the all-attractive. Krishna who can be attracted by the service of anyone. Which is a nice and merciful understanding of the name Krishna. That is a fact. He is Achyuta Krishna. Achyuta means the one who is infallible. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book, he says that name Achyuta is given to Krishna because Krishna is infallible. He never fails to notice the smallest service rendered by his devotee. So these are important things for me, because generally I do small service, so therefore, you know, I take note of these things. I underline them, I write them down, I remember them, so that even for people like me who only do small service, you know, it's like, well, I can always show this. Well, Krishna, it says here, the smallest service, I mean, it was, I know it wasn't very big, but, you know, still, it was some service. So, yes, these are the things that warm the heart. Krishna is kind in that way. Krishna is very kind. And then we see, because think of the situation. The living beings have turned away from Krishna, gone to the material world. Krishna was sort of like, don't go, why? You are going. So it's like, oh, no, no. Just have a little come. I'll be right back. No problem. Little curious. But curiosity kills the cat, as they say. Don't exactly what horrible story is behind that, but it's just a proverb, not a vegetarian one. Well, what to do? Proverbs are like that, yeah. Not always kosher. Anyhow, the situation then is we came here in the material world, and Krishna made arrangements for us, many arrangements. Many. Krishna appeared in this world again and again in different forms. It says that, of course, a million years ago, Krishna appeared in this world in the form of Lord Ramachandra. 5,000 years ago, he appeared in the form of Krishna. And it says that in Navadvip, the Lord also appeared in every home. In every home? Lord Chaitanya appeared in every home? No. Lord Chaitanya appeared in Navadvip, in the home of Jagannath Misra and Sachimata, under the neem tree. And that's why his nickname was Nimai. But it is also said that the Lord appeared in Navadvip in every home. In every home. Ah, yes. Ah, you smelled it. You guessed it. Did you? Or you slept right through it? Yes, in the form of? The holy name. Ah, yes. In every home, the Lord appears. So in this way, the Lord appears again and again, and that is a symptom of his causeless mercy. Because he has no obligation. He said, the mercy of the Lord is causeless, and that's a bewildering thing. How is the mercy of the Lord causeless? When we see that devotees are on their knees, that devotees are praying, that devotees are here every Sunday without fail. Some devotees deserve a medal. Now they do, you know. And every Sunday feast for like years in a row. Now, every time, never missed a Sunday. I mean, we should give out t-shirts, medals, banners, you know, like, never missed a Sunday banners, right? Huge cakes, I tell you, that's something. So, and then you're speaking of causeless mercy. Boy, it's hard work, spiritual life. You don't get it for nothing, is it? That is our experience. But it is not a fact. The mercy of the Lord is causeless, because the Lord, he takes initiatives towards us without any obligation from his side. at all. He is not by any means obliged to appear in the material world. He doesn't have to. And we have to. But he doesn't.
He doesn't.
He can stay and have his pleasure pastimes. And okay, he feels that it would be nice if all the living beings who have turned away from him would also be part of these pleasure pastimes. So he feels something there. But it's insignificant in comparison to the ocean of bliss that is existing in the spiritual world. Primam ritambo nidi. So he does not need. To come here. But he does. He does. And the thing is that when he does, he brings with his entire abode. I like that example, and sometimes I speak about, or many times actually, all the time, I speak about us traveling and you have like 20 kilos, you know, everything, your whole life in a bag of 20 kilos. It's all you can take, and you have scales at home, and it's a whole puzzle, you know. Oh God, it's too much. What? Okay. Okay, the big book. Oh, I really wanted to read it. To do now, because I got. Anyway, the electronic version. Gosh. But like that, we somehow or other managed it within 20 kilos. And then you go to the airport. And then, you know, all your loved ones come with you and they say goodbye and we're going to miss you. Oh, gosh, and at that time, you think, well, I'm not going to miss you that much. Or you think, or you think I'm going to miss you too. Whatever you may think. But anyway, the point is we have to leave so many things behind when we travel.
That's the nature of travel.
Things that we wouldn't want to leave behind. It's like on Tuesday I go to Australia. If I could, I would take South Africa with me. That would be lots of fun. If I just could take you all with me, just one time, that would be great, you know?
Yeah, great. That's the way it is over there. Good on you. Good on you. Good on you. Fair dinkum, she'd be right, eh? Hey, mate. Yeah. Yeah, check it out, mate.
So that would be fun if I could show you, you know. I've been there so many times, I know my way around. I'd love to show you and take you around, but I can't. Yeah? That's the way it is. But Krishna, when he comes, he takes everyone with him. Everyone. He takes the whole spiritual world with him. Nanda and Yasoda he takes with him. And then Nanda and Yasoda come here with Krishna in the material world. And what happens to the spiritual world? What do you think? That there's a note on the fridge? And says, we'll be right back. Nanda Maharaj. They're also there. They're also there at the same time. But that same spiritual world is here on this planet. I mean, isn't that something extraordinary? Isn't that something amazing? Vrindavan, Mayapur, the spiritual world on this planet. Is that causeless mercy or not causeless mercy? Sometimes I say, Krishna was thinking, all those living beings who've turned away from me, let me give them some mercy. And then he was thinking, some mercy? Why some mercy? I will give them all the mercy. And that's what he did. I mean, that's something. That's something only the Supreme Lord can do. You know. We also think, okay, I'll give you some mercy. Think. Mercy. But Krishna gives all the mercy. All. Everything. It doesn't hold back at all. And that's when we think of causeless mercy, it's not that it has. The reason why it is called causeless, because Krishna has no need to do all these things, and he's doing nonetheless. Of course, Krishna reciprocates. He reciprocates with his devotees. And the more one surrenders, and the more one is serious, and the more one is pure, the more one can attract Krishna, undoubtedly. And then, the other day I gave a talk, and it came to a point where we came to the conclusion of the lecture, is that Krishna is the greatest reward of all rewards. It's like big rugby match, South Africa, Australia. We were on the plane last night, and they were like announcing the scores in between, and everyone was sort of staying up and following the rugby guys digging themselves or each other into the mud. And it's a pretty gross and degraded activity, but still lots of people are sort of excited by it. But to say, we are I forgot my point. Why did I bring in the rugby? Went on a detour. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We'll land again with the plane and just return to Krishna. So there's so much distraction in the world. But when we return to Krishna, we return to our roots, and immediately that mercy is there. Krishna makes himself widely available to us in inconceivable ways, in the form of the holy Dhamma. And that is extraordinary, undoubtedly. And you can go there. And then Krishna makes arrangements. When he has a grandson, Krishna's grandson, I mean, quite an amazing grandson, if you think about it, named Vajranaba. Now, that grandson, he has installed deities and deities and deities all over the place, right? Wherever you go in Vrindavan, another deity installed by Vajranaba. You think, my God, he installed a deity a week, if not more. As we are going, and the book scores for this week, and the deity scores for this week, 53 installations of Radha Krishnas, 12 Balarams, and, I'm joking, but Vajranaba is an incarnation of mercy, of so much mercy. Because an agent of the Lord, who made arrangements for the Lord that there are deities everywhere now, and that we can go, and that Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj can show us everything about these places and about the Dhamma, and we can sort of prepare from the sofa at home and watch the videos before we actually go to these places. And then we go on the Vraj Mandal Parikrama, Navadvip Mandal Parikrama, so that we can do. But we cannot go all the time. That we cannot do. Some can live there, but most of us somehow rather live here. But one thing we can do all the time, chanting Hare Krishna. That we can do anywhere, any way, any time, doesn't matter. Whatever happens, you can still do that. Yeah. That is even greater causeless mercy. Therefore, the greatest causeless mercy is the holy name, because the holy name is always accessible in any place. It says it doesn't require any special circumstance. Yajna, Agnihotra, yajna, that's a big thing. Because everything has to be right. If something is wrong, sorry. Not the proper results. Too bad. Srimad Bhagavatam actually begins in that way. Because Srimad Bhagavatam describes how the sages in Naimisaranya had been performing a 1,000-year sacrifice. they lived a little longer in those days. And a 1,000-year sacrifice they had performed to ward off the influence of Kali Yuga. And chanting mantra after mantra and offering oblations. Quite a lot of ghee. Yeah, think about it. She said I was practical, and I'm just thinking about, imagine how much ghee that is, Sridhar. It's like he could calculate it, no problem. It's like, you know, for the basic parampara you need about a kilo. Yeah. So I don't know what parampara mantras they were chanting, but 1,000-year sacrifice, lots of ghee, lots of arrangements. And it said that they were not sure about the outcome. Their faces, as a result of the sacrifice, their faces had become black from the smoke. That's what's, that was about it. That was the result they got. Black faces. Yeah. So the point is that in this age, it is limited. It is limited what we can achieve by our endeavors. Our endeavors are not very perfect. Even when it comes to chanting, it's the most powerful, it's the greatest mercy, and it's the most wonderful gift we ever got, and it's the most impossible thing to do. Chanting. God, if only the Yuga Dharma was eating. If only the Yuga Dharma, I don't know, was dressing up. If only the Yuga Dharma was, gosh, you know, something, but not. I mean, can we do something else? difficult. So even although our chanting is poor, very poor, our offering is very poor, still, still so much benefit. It said even if you chant with offenses, if you keep on chanting, gradually you'll come to a point of chanting without offenses. So, very merciful is chanting in that way. Somehow or other we do it. Yeah, so that's our... And then we chant in two ways. We chant in kirtan and we chant japa. So both are needed, very much so. One nourishes the other. And kirtan is we together, we share the energy, and a mood is created and it carries us. The melody, the whole atmosphere, the beat, and the tension is building up, and then it comes down again, and some speed up slowly like Madhava, and some speed up fast like me. Different flavors, so many varieties. It's like there was Amala Harinam, who learned his kirtan from Ayendra Prabhu, and in Mayapur, he was reading this thing about how sometimes when you dress the deity in a very complicated way, then Krishna looks very simple. And I knew he's going to do a really complicated kirtan, that tune. And sure enough, it was amazing. It was really amazing. It was beautiful. It was celestial. It was transcendental. I couldn't follow it. But it didn't matter. I just listened, and it was very nice. Yeah, so I'm too simple. So do something more simple. But the chanting in kirtan, from the energy that we share, we get uplifted. When you chant japa, it is different. You know, While you're chanting in kirtan, you almost get tears in your eyes and you're thinking, I'm almost in Mahabhav. You know, I'm getting really advanced. Well, just when you got to that stage, start chanting some japa. It's like a cold shower. You come back to reality. You're exposed. Exposed for who, for what love for Krishna you really have. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Where's the Mahabhav during japa? It's gone. So in that way, we can see different effects. Both are needed somehow or other. This is the unique strength of this movement. Because this movement is the movement of pure devotional service. Excuse me, my nose. The movement of pure devotional service. It's not the cold. It's spring. The movement of pure devotees, not a movement of just getting medals for the Sunday feast, not a movement for, you know, getting a garland for eating the most gulab jamuns, and not a movement for winning competitions, but a movement where everyone is meant to be a pure devotee. That's the idea. And that's the life of this movement. And in that way, it is different. It is different. Because everyone is meant to come to that stage of pure devotional service. No one is to be exempt. Pass it on if you don't want. You don't have to write something. You can. It's a privilege. It's not an obligation. If you pass it on too quick, you miss an opportunity to actually deal with your deeper secret issues that now anonymously will be addressed. It's a chance, an opportunity. Or you can be merciful, an instrument of the causeless mercy of Krishna, and just write a question that will benefit all. So, yes. A movement for pure devotees and a movement. I was reading on a website about a group of monks, and in that tradition they had fathers and brothers. And it said the brothers were helping the fathers to do nothing. That was basically it. I thought, that's not... It was an interesting statement. It's not without meaning. It's not easy to do nothing. Because we're always busy doing so many things. And to actually stop. And to stop being so busy. And to become reflective and deep. And to actually not only think about what is the purpose of life. The first question is, what is the purpose of life? The second question is, once you've understood the purpose, is how to connect. How to find the strength to connect. So, like that, the brothers were helping the fathers. So that's nice. In our movement, we're all helping each other to become pure devotees. No one is meant to be exempt. It's not like a movement with a few devotees and those we're going to give an official label as great devotees, and we're going to hang garlands around the neck and put them on seats and so on. The idea is everybody. No one's exempt. Well, we have patience, you know. Okay, take a little more time. You know, the criminals need some more time.
do. But eventually, one day, if we carry on and are serious, we'll get the uniform of the spiritual world. So, are there a few questions on the board now? Or is there a live question?
Oh, lots of. Gee whiz. And like usual, in the famous South African hieroglyphics,
I mean, there are people, they study Egyptian hieroglyphics, and I'm sure that in the future there will be people studying South African hieroglyphics. I mean, we have an interesting sample here. Is it better to do japa or street chanting, or both? Can both purify us? It's like this, is that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Srila Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis. And he gave that instruction, Sankhya Purvaka Nama Gana Natibi, that one must fix a number of rounds and chant a number of rounds every day. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati, an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, claims that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a string around his waist, and that he had, or maybe like that, I don't know how he was wearing, with knots, and that he was chanting on the knots of the string. So not on tulsi beads, but on string with knots. But whatever, he was counting his chanting. So that's where it begins, this counting of the chanting has been emphasized by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu clearly and given as to Srila Rupa Goswami, which then, who's the leader of our sampradaya. We are known as Rupanukas or Rupanugavarya, the line coming from Srila Rupa Goswami. So, as the Rupanugavarya, it is our duty, so to follow those standards. Srila Prabhupada introduced kirtan also. He introduced Mangalarti, he introduced Guru Puji, he introduced an evening arti, he introduced all these things. And he wanted us to do that. Still, we took a solemn vow, right, or are meant to take a solemn vow at one stage, to chant every day 16 rounds minimum. So, in that way we can see, is it better to do japa or street chanting or both? Can both purify us? We should do japa, we should do street chanting, we should have midnight chanting with some devotees by candlelight, you know. We should have chanting on a boat and rock the boat. We should, I mean, there are no hard and fast rules. We can chant anywhere, anytime. We just chant, you know, chant on the way to work. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Chant during work. Not too loud so we won't get fired. But, you know, Kirtanya Sadahari, we should always chant. Yeah. And you know, we can sort of, you know, dress up in normal clothes and then come home and lock all the doors, close the curtains, you know, and put tea on. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. No. Sometimes we have to come out of the closet and actually stand up in public for Hare Krishna. And that takes a little courage. But you know Prabhupada's story. And Prabhupada's story was that there was a group of devotees in India, and they were working in this particular factory. And many of them were devotees, and they're all wearing tilak, and they're working in the factory, and the owner was a pious Hindu. And he was happy. But then he sold the company, and a Muslim bought the company. And the Muslim, he said, like, what is this, what is that on the nose there? That has to go. I don't want that in my company. So, you know, I mean, anyone who wants to keep his job, take it off. I mean, take it off, or go find another job. Okay, what to do? Crying, but children also crying, so, you know. Next day, everyone came without tilak. Then one man, still wearing his tilak. So the owner, the proprietor said, what is this? What is this? You are, you know, you're wearing tilak. Don't you know that I gave an order that no one can wear this in this factory? He said, sir, I'm a hard worker. I've worked hard for this company for many years, you know. And as far as my religion is concerned, that's my private affair. And the owner looked at him and said, I like you. You've got spirit. You can wear this tilak, but nobody else can. So, that was Prabhupada's story. I like it. Good story. So sometimes a little street chanting is a good idea. Krishna, who knows everything, also knew, as a K, you know, also knew, also knew that when the living beings were created, that they will desire to come to the material world. Why does he still allow this to happen? The living beings are eternal. So it's not that Krishna was all alone in the spiritual world and one day thought, what shall I do? Let's create some living beings. Let's have a party. No. There is an eternal, ecstatic, exchange going on. That's the first thing. So this idea of Krishna creating is thinking in terms of our situation. The next thing is that on eternity, the living being can think, I could also be the enjoyer, the master, instead of the servant. And some might think, that's an interesting thought. So as long as you dwell on that thought, then you are in tatastha, in the marginal state. From the marginal state, you can return to devotional service, or you can come down. That's why curiosity kills the cat, as said before. So the root cause of coming to the material world is our curiosity, not envy. You know, it's not you're in the middle of serving Krishna with love and suddenly envy arises, but curiosity. And then it develops very quickly. Why did Krishna arrange in that way? Because Krishna gives us freedom to choose. And the living beings are like, as they are sparks of the fire, drops of the ocean. The drop has the same quality as the same as the whole ocean, but in different quantity. So Krishna himself has independence, so we all serve independence. Love is not complete without choice, without independence. So Krishna gave the choice. He had to, for the sake of love. For love to be able to be expressed. Love is voluntary. Otherwise the spiritual world would be a happy concentration camp. And everybody dance. Now we're going to play the flute. Okay, all right. They're going to the forest again this morning. Forest, we're going to the forest. It's something like Disney World. You know? Yeah. Yeah. We're happy and happy with Mickey Mouse. When fasting on Ekadasi, and when we break fast the next day, if we don't break it in the allotted time, is it an offense? If so, how do we overcome this? We'll burn in hell. There's no hope. Such a serious thing. This is terrible. Well, initially, we never knew about such things in ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada had Ekadasi, and there was one calendar that he used for ISKCON, that was the Mayapur calendar from the Chaitanya Mat, and it followed the Mayapur time, and we were all following the Mayapur time, and Ekadasi was broken in the early morning, sometime after sunrise, you know, that was it. And we never knew all these other things, that you have to break it between 6:10 and 7:53, and you know, and all these complicated things, and that you need to constantly carry an electronic thing, you know, with you to calculate where am I now, and because I don't know if it's happened already, but that that in Durban it was Ram Nomi on one day, and that in Pietermaritzburg it was on the next day. Has that happened yet?
Yeah.
I'm asking Pietermaritzburg, are you from Pietermaritzburg? Maybe not here, but in...
Between India and Pietermaritzburg.
Oh, we've had between Calcutta and Mayapur. You know, between Calcutta and Mayapur, we've had like that Jamastami one day later in Calcutta. Could have it twice. That's good. That year we had two Jamastamis. I've also had a Radhastami in Spain, and I quickly flew to Radhadesh and had Radhastami again. That was great. But I've also had the other way around, that Ekadasi's disappeared. I flew somewhere and then Ekadasi was gone. She said, well, what to do? So Srila Prabhupada is not too fanatic about it, you know. Only later, when computers came, we introduced very strict rules. And traditionally, yes, there is the Ekadasi Param, the time that you're supposed to break the fast. And if you don't, according to Shastra, if you don't break according to the Param, then that is not auspicious. You will not get the benefit of all that fasting. Now, the question is, are we fasting for some benefit, or are we doing it just for Krishna's pleasure? So, therefore, for Krishna, okay, you know, you try and follow that as much as possible. But, yeah, sometimes when you don't have the computer program and everything, you don't always know the time. Or sometimes you just forget and just, oh, geez, I forgot, and what now? Anyway, better luck next time. It's one of those. It's not that we are worrying so much about the seriousness of the offense, because Srila Prabhupada wasn't taking it that serious. But we try to do this. we try and do it. So it is something we try to follow because it is a standard, but it is a detail of secondary importance. How does one inspire others to distribute books? Vibhu Chaitanya, how do you do that?
By seeing those who are inspired.
Okay, by seeing those who are inspired. I think that you should look at Vibhu Chaitanya. Because even like the last few years, they gave him so much management, you know, that he just couldn't win the marathon anymore. Right? You know, basically, you know, he was winning every marathon, right? Even although they piled him up with management as a vice president, so totally overloaded, still he was winning. Right? It's like running a race with like a backpack, you know? Right? Still he was winning the race. And then they start putting so much weight, you know. Takes a Rup service as well. So now he has two backpacks. And with two backpacks he didn't win the race anymore. But he still was up in the top scores. And now he's taken on a greater service in book distribution because now he's promoting book distribution in South Africa as a whole. So I think, how to inspire others about book distribution. It's as simple, how do you inspire anybody about anything?
Do it yourself.
By being inspired yourself. You're only inspiring when you are, when you're inspired yourself. Otherwise you can't inspire nobody to, you know. Please chant Hare Krishna. it's the most sublime thing. You know, like people say, go home. You know, you gotta be inspired, you know, about book distribution. Therefore, just like Vaisheshika is a very famous book distributor in our movement, and he is incredibly inspired and ever incredibly inspiring. I mean, inconceivable. If you want to find out more about him, look at distributebooks.com. And there you'll see so many interesting things on the site, which are all inspiring. Therefore, if you want to be inspired in book distribution, distributebooks.com, distributebooks.com, distributebooks.com. Okay. Did we really turn away from someone so absolute? I think I answered that sort of before the turning away. Someone liked the chanting. I don't know if I'm going to read that. But the point is that when we like someone's kirtan, then that's good. And anything we like about Hare Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna is good, you know, even if we like a kirtan sung by a frog. But it's the Hare Krishna. It's the Maha Mantra that makes it good. And yes, I hope that all that chanting will also inspire us to chant. It is the period of Navaratri when there is worship of the nine forms of Yoga Maya or Durga. Please explain her. Well, Durga Devi is the superintendent of the material energy. She is known as Durga, which means Dur is difficult and Ga means to go. So there are different levels of God consciousness.
The question continues on the next.
Oh. That's a tricky question. It is the period of Navratri where there's worship of the nine forms of Yogamaya. Please explain her position in relation to the Supreme Lord, and in what way may she be worshipped? Okay.
So, there are five types of worship. The lowest level is the Shakta. The Shakta is the worshipper of Durga or the worshipper of Kali. He or she is worshipping the material energy. The material energy shows sometimes its ghastly form. Right? The material energy is sometimes very harsh. Sometimes the material energy seems to want blood. Well, better the blood of a goat than my blood. Yes, of a goat. Goat chalega. Very good. Maria, Maria. Bakri. Pakka bakri. So, what to do? The Shakta. So the idea of Shakta is the lowest because it is the idea of pacifying the evil or the harsh manifestation of the world around us. So the nasty face of God. So it's based on fear. It's based on fear. And you try to pacify the deity. So it's the same in many primitive religions, ward off evil, right? So many things. So any worship that is like meant to ward off negative influences is considered the lowest. That's Shakta worship. So you can count also certain tribal rituals are also in the Shakta mentality. Same thing. Then you get the Suryas, the sun worshippers. The Suryas are worshipping the positive energy. It also includes Chi or Reiki, aligning the chakras. Why is it, one lady asked me in Durban, that you have to take off your shoes when you go in the temple? I said, well, it's a matter of respect, you know, cleanliness. She said, oh, I thought it was to catch the earth rays through the chakras in your feet. That's pretty good. People. So that's Surya. Catching the prana, the energies, the positive energy, one with the universe. And the universe gives, and the universe takes. And know that when the universe takes, that it takes to give you something better. Just read that in a magazine the other day. Okay. Is it really better? Sometimes you wonder if it's better what the universe just gave. I really thought that what I had was better than what the universe gave me now. No, we see it different. Karma, action, reaction. Sometimes sweet karma, sometimes heavy karma. So anyway, that's the Suryas. A higher level than the Suryas are the Ganapatyas, who are worshipping Ganapati. So cute. And Ganapati, yes, you know, belly. Ganapati gives you perfect. The Vaishyas are worshipping Ganapati. The idea is, I make a sacrifice for you and then, you know, give me the blessings. So there's a kind of a business relationship there. And it's kind of the focus of that worship is very much the immediate needs. It's not broad, it's not deep, it's not philosophical, it's not asking deep questions in the Ganapachas. Ganapachas is, you know, what can I, my immediate needs and profits and things like that. The Shaivites go to the root of things, because we have the Lingam, representing the male and female. And here, Sadashiva is depicted. Sadashiva, who is impregnating the material energy with the living beings at the beginning, and all the, and then the material world continues from there on. The Mahatattva comes into being. So Sadashiva is the generating, this is Shambhu, is the generating principle, and Prakriti, the material energy receiving the living entities, and therefore the Lingam in this way. So therefore the idea is that all this material energy comes from Shiva, and then it's manifest, and then it ceases to exist, and it all merges again. Therefore, many impersonalists are Shaivites. They think everything, the form is temporary, and behind that is the original spiritual energy. But then, where is the love? It said, where is the love when there's not a person? There can be love all by yourself, love, love, love. Love is all you need. All you need is love. But love grows in exchange. So therefore, in the love that is experienced in the impersonal realization is considered lower. And in the higher is the bhakta. So once again, lowest level, Shakta, Surya, Ganapati, Shaivat, and the bhakta, the Vaishnava. So, there are different levels of God consciousness. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur pointed out that these mentalities exist in all the traditions of the world. And that, for example, the Western scientists, he says they're also Shaktas. They're also trying to manipulate the material energy and bring the harsh face of material energy under control. Ooh, it's cold outside. Let's turn up the heater. Ooh, it's so hot. AC. So, we solved the harsh face of the material energy. Shaktas, Shakta mentality, Surya mentality. Do you feel it? You feel any better? A little. I have, many people have done Reiki on me, but I haven't met anyone like Jesus yet, you know. With all due respect, you know. If someone could only put his hand on me and I was, I'm cured, that would be wonderful. Then I would become a believer. Ganapachas, we have seen. Shaivites, so many, around the corner. And Vaishnavas, Manushyanam sahasrisu kaschit yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam viditatvudaha. Out of many, among thousands, some will endeavor to know me in truth. Out of thousands of those who will endeavor to know me in truth, hardly one attains perfection. So Vaishnavas are rare. But then Srila Prabhupada came and suddenly changed that verse around and just started making Vaishnavas left and right, and even people who never thought about such a thing, they suddenly start also become Vaishnavas, and therefore now Vaishnava is not so rare anymore. Now anybody gets the chance to be a Vaishnava. And even the Shaktas, you know, they sometimes in between the rituals, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. It's like, without meaning to say anything critical, but there is a particular group of
devotees from South India, and they have every year a chariot festival, and they're pulling their chariot, and it's very nice. But there's no kirtan. So they pull the chariot for 10 minutes, and then they sit down, and then they pull the chariot for 10 minutes, and they sit down, and then they pull the chariot, and they sit down. And in between, and then they keep up. And so it's the whole day of pulling the chariot. So then it was, well, you Hare Krishnas, you do such nice kirtan, so why don't you come? So okay, I was doing the kirtan team, and they wouldn't chant. They were not chanting. It took quite something. Yeah. It took quite something. It took all my shakti, right, to dance in front of them. And, but finally, some men started to go, you know. And eventually, you know, I had the whole group, everybody dancing and chanting, and they forgot to sit down. I don't mean to criticize, but I'm just meaning to say, yeah, Lord Chaitanya's Sangita movement is special, and anybody now can become Krishna.
Yes. So these Shaktas, no, we don't partake in that worship. No.
Durga, we offer prasadam to Durga, Krishna prasadam. That's as far as it goes. If you want to do anything, take some prasadam, Krishna prasadam, offer to a Durga picture, that you can do, or a statue, whatever you have.
You mentioned that every one of us should endeavor to become pure devotees. How do we remain encouraged on this path when things get tough and we slip?
Durgale patinendasya skalapadakatir mohu yat kripa swasti danena santa santavalambanam, says Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami.
He said, my path is very difficult. My feet are slipping again and again, but by the stick of the mercy of the Vaishnavas, I can remain on the path. In the seventh, this was exactly on the point, what can I say? In the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, there's also an interesting verse which says, one who wears the shoes of satisfaction doesn't feel the thorns on the path. So, and the shoes of satisfaction come by the mercy of Krishna. When we endeavor very much to serve Krishna, yeyatamam prapadyante, Krishna rewards us accordingly, with happiness. So the more we try to serve Krishna, then if you try very hard, then one day there is that strange feeling, gosh, what's that? You know, I'm kind of happy today.
I don't know what it is, you know, it's strange. I never really felt like this. It's kind of, I don't know what to do with it, but it's kind of fun, actually.
That's the result of serving Krishna with great enthusiasm. And what if you don't have enthusiasm? Then you just act as if you're enthusiastic.
That's the old story of Vishnujan, right? Vishnujan,
why are you always so enthusiastic in kirtan? Vishnujan, I'm not always enthusiastic in kirtan, but I always act enthusiastic in kirtan. Then the devotees become enthusiastic in kirtan, and that makes me enthusiastic. Like that.
And we're almost at the end. Okay. It's number 9, the lucky question. Women gurus, what is your opinion? In exceptional cases, that's our tradition. Because generally speaking, ladies are, according to Vedic culture, in a position of dependence on father, dependence on husband, or mature son. And
and that is recommended. That can be, that is recommended for a reason, obviously, and should not be overlooked as, therefore when I'm saying that that's an important point, then it's not male chauvinism, right? But then that is basically what Shastra says, and we must put our faith and trust in Shastra, that if they emphasize something, that it's important. However, when you chant Hare Krishna, then one can become so transcendentally potent that even all limitations fall away, and then it's possible. So there have been great ladies in the past who were great spiritual masters, or yeah, I don't want to use the word mistresses. that sounds a little strange. So you gotta come up with a gurus. As far as in ISKCON, I don't know such things. Complicated. That's, you know, how to apply something like that. That's management, right? When you have to decide who is qualified, who's not, that, or who can do it, who cannot. Do we need a system for approval of gurus, or do gurus just emerge self-effulgent and so on? All these kind of questions. Thank God, I'm not in management. So I don't have to answer such questions. That question you can ask Bhakti Chaitanya, because he's the GBC for South Africa. So he can give you the, besides a personal opinion, also the opinion of the leadership of the movement. You mentioned that this is a movement for pure devotees. Rupa Goswami defines pure devotees and nectar devotions on Yabhadasta Sunyam. How do we understand the sort of anukul, which is a primary characteristic? Some say is the intent to please Krishna. How can we do this in the impure state without being artificial? Anukul yena Krishna nu shilanam bhaktir uttama. To always think about Krishna favorably, not like Kamsa, who is always thinking in fear of Krishna and always thinking in hate of Krishna, but never for a moment forgot Krishna. No, that is not anukul. Therefore, although Kamsa was never thinking of anything else but Krishna, still Kamsa was not in the category of anyabhilasita sunyam, because he had a desire that Krishna would be killed. Favorably, with a desire to please Krishna. That begins in a humble way. In a humble way, we can, in the beginning, we also want to please ourselves. And why are we doing all this devotional service? Are we doing it for Krishna? Really? Or are we doing it for ourselves? Are we even doing it because we got burned in the material world and it's just enough of all this heavy karma that's going around and we don't want it anymore? So to what extent is our motivation mixed? What to do about that? You know? Then we can do lots of soul searching and lots of introspection and lots of analysis until the cows come home, or, you know, and in the end you get on what is called the mental platform. You know, am I humble, or am I actually proud of taking the humble position? Yeah? Or am I proud that I'm not proud that I'm taking the humble position? You know? Or, actually, I mean, thinking about it, am I taking pride in the fact that I gave up being proud of being proud of being humble? And what
constitutes being humble anyway. I mean, if I think about it, is it even humble to ask this question? Maybe it's offensive to ask such a question, because maybe if I was humble, I would leave it up to Krishna. But there is a platform called the mental platform, and there you can have a great time. Fantastic time. And we can recommend that platform if you just want to get more and more confused. Just endless questions and questions and questions and questions. So at one point, let us accept, yes, our motivation is mixed. We are not completely free from other desires. But we are so much free from other desire that we have decided that we were going to be devotees. That's something. And even although we have other desires, while we're devotees, we keep to that decision. We stick to it. Even while the other desires are sometimes like, come on, don't be fanatic. No, I'm going to follow this. No. That's something. So at least that much we are giving up other desires. And that's the beginning. And then it goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper over time until one is really free from other desires. And then immediately, whenever we give up some space for an other desire, we must fill that space with service. You see, it's not all about being free from I'm free from all other desires, no. Totally. I mean, you know, haven't got any, don't know what to do these days. No. When we are free from all other desires, then we must, that can only be when we fill our whole life with service to Krishna. Just look at Prabhupada. What one man did, right? I mean, you could write a book about Prabhupada, what one man did, you know. Right? That could be a title of a book about him. It's just amazing what one man did. Because he was Anya Abhila Sunyam, free from other desires. So free from all the desires. So therefore, someone was saying, we should not only look at the external of someone's achievements, but we should also look at the depth, at the inner depth, you know, of his devotion. I said, okay. But it is like when you dig a hole, you know, when you dig a hole, right, you do not just get a hole, which is very deep, but next to it you get a pile of dirt, right, which is like, you get a big pile, which is very high. So those are the achievements of the digging. So in the achievements, it shows the depth. When we are looking at Prabhupada's achievements, we see the depth of his love for Krishna. Therefore, don't worry so much about focusing on the depth, how deep is my motivation. Focus on doing something for Prabhupada and Krishna. And in the process of doing those things, in that hard labor, the depth will increase. And that's more easy, it's more measurable than, you know, the very subtle and ethereal in there. A bit of introspection is necessary. Some reflection is necessary. But ultimately, Krishna consciousness is different from psychology in the sense that in psychology we're looking at making some mental adjustment,
looking at making a mental adjustment, some way or other. Some adjustment in the circumstances, some mental adjustment. But in Krishna consciousness, we're just looking at a devotional adjustment in service, just due to service, and the service is a saving grace. The result will be that the mental adjustment will come. You know, I was reading in Encyclopedia Britannica, and there it said that perhaps Freud had the most impact on the intellectual life of the modern world. He gave us the model of the pressure cooker. Right? And here we are, pressure cooker, the tension building up, and then let out the steam, I'm gonna explode! It's time! You know, it's like, so, no repression. And somewhere a solution has to be when the pressure builds up is to relieve that pressure and allow more space for suppressed nature. Krishna consciousness, that's not so much the issue. We don't need the emergency valve, because the chanting of Hare Krishna will diminish the pressure in the pressure cooker itself. That's what happens. The pressure in the steam kettle just goes down by the chanting of Hare Krishna. That's the nature of chanting Hare Krishna. Or to say it in Sanskrit technical terms, the aprarabdha karma will be destroyed by devotional service. And it's the aprarabdha karma, or the unmanifest karma, that is the cause of all this pressure. So, other desires are many. They are due to previous sinful association. It said, you engage in sinful activities, it causes sinful reactions. They are stored within the heart, the store is there, and the result is sinful inclination. And the result is that you want to do it again. And then you do it, more sinful activity, then more sinful reactions, then even more sinful inclination, anya abhilas, other desires, more and more. Like, so that verse, aparapta phalam papam kutam bijan phalam mukam kramaneva praliyatam Vishnu bhakti ratatmanam, from the Vishnu Purana, is actually explaining how these anya abhilas come about and how we get rid of them through devotional service. Because devotional service, it diminishes the reactions of our karma. It destroys the stock of sinful reactions in the heart. It diminishes that. And with it, it changes the inclination that we have for performing more sinful activities. So gradually, it becomes less, the desire to do all these other things. It's like, after many years in devotional service, you just lose that desire to drink a glass of beer. It's like beer. It's like, you get over that. You know, it's no longer like an issue. But in the beginning, it can be. There's a beer fest coming. Hold me back. Those were your questions, and this was my contribution to the Sunday program. I think